Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 206 event, which takes place in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Now, immediately following our UFC 206 breakdowns, we'll be giving out our quick picks for Friday's UFC Fight Night 102 event in Albany, New York, instead of a full podcast for that show due to a lot of craziness going on this week. Now, looking back at our last event, we went 3-1 on our premium bets for the Tough 24 finale this past weekend to profit 4.3 units overall. We also lost our one-unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC 206 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a flyweight contest between Zach Makovsky, who is 19-7, and Dustin Ortiz, who is 15-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Great fight to start things off with, for sure, with UFC 206. Kind of unreal that it's the opening bout here, but I opened Makovsky minus 215, the comeback on Ortiz at plus 165. Right now, looking over sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. Currently, Makovsky minus 160, the comeback on Ortiz plus 140. So about a, 25-cent drop in the dog. People are betting Ortiz a little bit more. I'm a bit surprised. I mean, considering if you look at the styles and how these guys match up, it should be a competitive fight, no doubt about it. And I do think it's a dog or pass situation. But I'm surprised that the public came in that way, considering the last couple losses for Ortiz have been to grapplers, and we all know how good of a grappler Makovsky is as well. So I honestly figured that even though it's going to be a close fight, people would hop on Makovsky, maybe bet it up a little bit. I was wrong. So people snatched a pretty decent line, I think, at plus 165 early on, even though I do favor Makovsky in this fight as well. I just think Makovsky is a little bit better. I know Ortiz is going to push a high pace. He's going to be aggressive for sure. He definitely belongs in the top tier of the 125-pounders, no doubt. But I just think Makovsky on the feet is a little bit more technical. I think Makovsky on the ground is a little bit more well-versed as well, even his wrestling. I mean, what his fight with Tim Elliott really impressed me a lot. I was surprised how easy Makovsky was, honestly. I mean, Elliott's a really good grappler. I mean, granted, we just saw him against Demetrius Johnson, and he's kind of proven that, but Johnson was able to control him. But Makovsky was able to pretty much dominate that fight on the ground as well. So styles make fights, and I was thinking that a lot of people would probably fade Ortiz since he did kind of struggle against a matchup sort of like this. So I do like Makovsky in this fight. Again, I think if it hits the scorecards, he's going to be the better striker a little bit, and I think he is going to be the better grappler overall. But I think Ortiz is going to be competitive enough that this is going to be like a split decision type of fight. It all depends on what the judges like, because Ortiz will definitely be there a little bit more aggressive overall. He'll be pushing a higher pace. So I think that's where Makovsky's going to struggle if he's not spending some time in top position or on his back. So my official pick is going to be Makovsky, but it isn't a very confident pick because I do think it's a dog or pass situation.
Yeah, Zach Makovsky's had a tough run. I mean, he goes out there, faces John Dodson, has a competitive fight against him, loses. And how do they reward him? How about a fight against Joseph Benavidez? So he is a fighter that has been in there against already probably three of the best five fighters in the division with Formiga, Benavidez, and Dodson. Now, Dodson did end up moving up, and he lost all three of those fights. So he kind of knows where he is in the pecking order in the flyweight division. He's not top five caliber, but he is top 10 caliber. He's beaten some really tough guys, as Nick mentioned, Tim Elliott. Zach Makovsky is pretty solid on the feet overall. He has some surprising power in his left hand, and he definitely has been improving his stand-up technique over the years. Now, on the ground, that's where Makovsky has shined, back even in his Bellator days. I mean, he would just dominate people with his ground game, get takedowns, get submissions. That's kind of been his bread and butter. But I think that will be his biggest strength here against Ortiz,
because even though Makovsky is better technically on the feet than Ortiz, I think Ortiz might be able to push a higher pace on the feet and maybe make this fight close on the judges' scorecards if it stays standing the whole time. On the ground, Ortiz is about as good of a wrestler as Makovsky, but I don't think he scrambles as well as Makovsky. And I also don't think Ortiz has the submission game of Makovsky. So I think if Makovsky can drag this fight to the floor, I think you'll see where Ortiz has struggled in his last couple bouts against Wilson Hayes and Jussier Formiga. It'll be a similar type of situation where I think Makovsky can just get on top of him and control him, maybe potentially threaten with a submission. But for the most part, I just see Ortiz losing a ground battle. And I also see him losing the stand-up fight, but I think it would be competitive. So I'm hoping Makovsky makes this fight a little bit easier for himself. So my pick is going to be Zach Makovsky. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Jason Sago, who is 12-2, taking on Rustem Khabilov, who is 20-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Khabilov -260, the comeback on Sago at +180. Right now, the line over five dimes is Khabilov -210. The comeback on Sago is +175. So only a 5 cent drop on the dog, and line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there is two-way action coming out of this fight. Early on, it was Sago. Now we're starting to see some love back in on Khabilov. This is another tough fight. I mean, competitive fight for sure. I mean, again, that's another one of these cards, I think, from top to bottom is a pretty competitive fight. The UFC has been doing a great job matching all of the recent cards a little bit more, I mean, competitive and a little bit better for the bettors out there. Because if you look at it, how many fights these days are under 2-1? I mean, that's some tough matchups, and that means a lot of competitive matchups for sure. And I think this is going to be actually another one. Sago just kind of flies under the radar a little bit more. And basically what it comes down to this fight is, can Khabilov control him on the ground and squeak by getting a decision, I think. Because I don't think these guys finish each other. I do think that on the feet, it's going to be interesting. I think Sago is probably a little bit underrated on the feet. Khabilov, he does okay. But again, he's not going to blow you away on the feet either. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see who wins a striking battle here. But on the ground, even though Sago, I think, is a little bit better overall with his jiu-jitsu, I think Khabilov, still the wrestling factor comes into play here. And I think he will probably squeak by getting enough, again, just controlling the fight, grinding Sago out a little bit. So at price, I do think it's another dog or pass situation here. I mean, I would not lay the cards or lay the price when this fight probably hits the cards, and it's in Canada to boot in a competitive matchup here. So dog or pass situation, but my official pick, I mean, it's hard not to side with Khabilov. And again, it's basically following the normal pattern that he has, getting the fights to the floor and basically controlling the action there, and that's why I'm picking him.
I was actually really impressed with Jason Sago in his last fight against Leandro Silva. He just went out there and took the fight to Silva. And yeah, it ended up being a split decision, but I mean, it was a really close fight. Sago was very competitive with him on the ground. He was competitive with him on the feet, even though Silva is probably the more technically superior fighter. Sago just pushed the pace and made it more competitive by taking advantage of the fact that Silva kind of sits back a little bit sometimes too much. And he was the one that was dictating everything, and that helped him win that split decision over a fighter that I think is technically superior to him. He's going to have to do that again against Khabilov. Rustem Khabilov is a fighter that has so much promise because of his incredible grappling ability, the fact that he can just toss people on their head and just completely dominate them. I mean, you saw he had such an impressive debut in the UFC where his first two fighters that he faced, he just was tossing them on their head and they just were getting hurt. And obviously it slowed down a little bit with his losses against Benson Henderson and Adriano Martins, but I think we're starting to see where Khabilov belongs a little bit in the pecking order now. He's had he had a really impressive performance against Chris Wade, who is a good grappler in his own right. And then when he battled Leandro Silva, it was another competitive fight. And, but Khabilov finally kind of smartened up and really went to his, grappling a little bit and was able to take that fight from, Silva. So what I think happens here is I think Sago is going to be competitive on the feet against, Khabilov. I think Sago is going to scramble and make things interesting on the ground, but Khabilov will control if the fight stays standing or goes to the ground. And I think Khabilov should win most of the scrambles on the ground as well. So For me, this fight is definitely Rustam Khabibov's to lose. He is the more technically sound and probably the more physically stronger fighter of the two. And I expect that Khabibov wins this fight. So he is my pick. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have John McDessie, who is 14-5, taking on Lando Vannetta, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Vannetta, -130, the comeback on McDessie, -110. So virtually a pick'em with a slight lean towards Vannetta. Right now it's Vannetta actually -185. The comeback on McDessie is +160. So that's not a typo. I mean, obviously everybody is betting Vannetta in this fight. More folks, I guess I should say, because there's some comeback on McDessie already, and I'm sure it'll continue to trickle back in a little bit, especially at the current price. But most people are definitely confident of Vannetta here. I mean, look at his debut over – I mean, what he did over with Ferguson. I mean, he didn't win that fight, but he was awful close a few times. And, I mean, you're talking about stepping in on short notice and fighting a legit contender, maybe the future champion at 155 pounds. We're not sure yet, obviously. So that's how good Ferguson has been fighting and how he is. And Vannetta gave him all he can handle and more. So I think, you know, looking at Vannetta before that, obviously his skill set, he's a strong wrestler. He's got power. He's got that unorthodox striking ability as well. And he's got a good camp, Jackson's. So I believe that there's a lot of good things to like about Vannetta. He's only 24 years old as well. With all that being said, though, McDessie's takedown defense is pretty solid. So it depends on how dominating Vanetta's wrestling is going to be in this fight. I think he's going to probably struggle. And McDessie's actually the more technical striker of the two, even though Vannetta's going to be able to definitely land and deliver some punishment on the feet. I think McDessie's a little bit more of a sniper, and I think that the striking aspect of this will be interesting. I mean, McDessie's fought unorthodox fighters before. I mean, you can't really compare Cruikshank to Vannetta. It's a different type of fight, obviously, but at the same time, I mean, Cruikshank has that movement and that unorthodox striking as well. And McDessie was able to pretty competitive win, basically, on the scorecards, get a pretty competitive win here. So in my opinion, I'm not that confident. I mean, especially with the whole world coming in on Vannetta acting like he already won the fight. It makes me like McDessie here. I think in my mind, it's a true kind of toss-up until Vannetta proves to me that, you know, with a non-short notice fight against a solid competitor like McDessie. I know, again, I'm going to throw the Ferguson fight out the window a little bit here, but I mean, until he proves to me that he can beat a legit solid fighter, because that's exactly what McDessie is. I mean, he's not going to be fighting for the title anytime soon, but he's not exactly an easy out either. So if Vannetta wins, you know, he hangs with Ferguson, like we just said, and then he comes in here and actually wins a full fight, like with not short notice against a solid fighter like McDessie, I think he really will be on his way to some really good things, but he's got to prove it to me first. A steady 3-round fight. There's a lot of question marks surrounding Vannetta, in my opinion, still. And I think McDessie's just a more consistent, steady type of fighter. And it doesn't hurt that he's in Canada either. So I'll go against the grain here in this spot. Not confidently, but I'll go against the grain and I'll pick McDessie to win this fight because I think he could probably keep this fight upright. And on the scorecards, I think it's going to be close, but McDessie might be maybe edging it out on the scorecards by his technical striking skill.
Yeah, we learned a lot about Vannetta in that UFC debut. It was one of the most entertaining fights of 2016. I mean, a guy steps in on short notice, you know, just him against the world, against one of the best lightweights on the planet, and he had Tony Ferguson on the ropes. I mean, he was so close to putting him away. And if you go back and watch that fight, it wasn't a lucky punch. Landon Vannetta has technique. Landon Vannetta is a really talented fighter. He was definitely, in my opinion, one of the best lightweights that had not been fighting in the UFC yet. That was one of the best prospects. So I don't think it was a fluke that he almost put away Ferguson. So if you look at that fight and you think how close and competitive he was with one of the best in the world, now obviously that doesn't immediately make him one of the top contenders, but I definitely think that it makes him at least mid-tier UFC level instantly. And that's about what John McDessie is. So this is going to be a great test for Landon Vannetta to see just how good he is. McDessie has a great Taekwondo base, really talented kicks. He can mix it up. He has some spinning attacks with his hands. He has a little bit of pop in his hands too. So McDessie is going to test Vannetta. And if Vannetta comes in a little wild and over aggressive, McDessie can punish him with counters. The problem is, one of McDessie's issues is sometimes he's over-reliant on counters and jabs. And sometimes the judges just don't score those the same way. And while I expect this fight to be really competitive on the feet, I actually think that Vannetta can win it because of the pace that he pushes and because of his power and his confidence. And on the ground, if you mix in the ground, I think Vanetta can definitely win this fight. He should have an advantage if it goes to the floor. He has pretty good wrestling. He has good top control. And that's never really been a strength of McDessie. He's been almost entirely focused on defense in that area instead of anything offensive. So overall, I think that Landon Vanetta, this is a great opportunity for him. And I think that he puts himself on the map here with a performance against McDessie that I think he really shines. So I'm going to actually side with Lando Vanetta. Now moving on to the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a bantamweight contest between Mitch Gagnon, who is 12-3, and Matthew Lopez, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Gagnon, minus 175, the comeback on Lopez at plus 135. Right now, Gagnon is minus 155, Lopez is plus 135. So line margins basically tighten up a little bit. There is two-way action coming in on this fight as well. First of all, I mean, Gagnon has not fought since his loss to Barao, which was December 2014. So he's been out for quite a while, obviously with injuries. And he's making his reappearance here against a pretty tough opponent. In fact, these guys are a lot of similarities. I mean, both these guys have powerful wrestling bases. Both these guys are really good on the ground as well with their submissions. And both these guys have some power on the feet. I think Lopez has a striking edge in the spot here. I think Gagnon might have a little bit of an edge overall on the ground against Lopez, especially with his submission ability. But that being said, I mean, I don't think Gagnon is going to present some of the same problems or issues that Yaya did against Lopez in his debut. So I think I'm expecting a better Lopez to show up here against Gagnon, but this should be a firefight. I mean, I think it's going to be competitive. It's going to be close. Both these guys tend to slow down. So like I said, to me, they're basically mirror images of each other. But I do think that Gagnon, based on who he's fought, what he's accomplished thus far in the UFC, having that kind of experience, it will matter a little bit. And he's kind of proven to me that, you know, he belongs kind of in that upper tier a little bit more. So Lopez is going to have to step up here and get a solid win against Gagnon, I think, to kind of get respect back from the bettors out there as well. But I do think it's going to be a coin flip type of fight. So I don't know. I guess I'm going to shake things up and go Lopez. Again, one of these spots that I think it's basically a toss-up type of fight. I'm going to fade some of these guys that have been out for so long today. I mean, it's just one of those situations that, I mean, Lopez is kind of the younger, hungry fighter that's looking to, you know, make a name for himself in the UFC. Gagnon's kind of already done that, even though, you know, he can obviously accomplish a lot more. And again, with the time off, it just all the circumstances surrounding this fight. I mean, if it was a pretty steady type of fight for Gagnon, if he's been fighting, you know, at a steady pace and not been out for a couple of years, I'd probably go his way. But the difference here with everything that I've seen in Lopez, and I'm expecting a little bit of a better Lopez to show up in this fight, I got to side with him a little bit. So my pick is going to be Lopez to win.
While I am concerned about ring rust with Mitch Gagnon, I don't think it'll be as big of a deal. I mean, he is coming off of a 2-year layoff because of a really bad knee injury, but he's back, he's healthy, and he's ready to go. I mean, he's a guy that is an extremely talented athlete. In my opinion, he's one of the physically strongest bantamweights on the roster. He has a lot of power in his hands, and he can just overwhelm people on the ground as well. So I think if this fight goes to the floor, then, you know, ring rust is over. Just autopilot will kick in for Gagnon, and I think that he will be able to hold his own, if not get the better of Lopez on the canvas. And on the feet, Gagnon has really taken some strides. He's shown some big-time power in his hands. I think his technique is there, and I expect that he would get the better of Lopez on the feet as well. I think he can hurt Lopez in the stand-up. Now, Lopez in his UFC debut, he did gas really badly against Yaya, especially as that fight wore on. But I'm going to, you know, toss that one out a little bit. I think short notice, UFC jitters, UFC debut, and you're facing a really talented grappler, and you're getting into these crazy scrambles. So I'm going to forgive him for that. So I think that actually these guys' conditioning are both going to be fine. And if anybody's fails, maybe it'll be Gagnon's, because he does have a history of it, although he was improving it, and he did start to work on it. But then 2 years out, who knows how much that's going to affect his conditioning. So I think this fight will be competitive, as Nick mentioned, but I just see, as long as the Mitch Gagnon returns, that had that amazing fight against Hanan Barao in his last contest, then I think that he should be able to defeat Matthew Lopez. He's just on another level, and I think that he could be a top 15 guy, especially if he can stay healthy. So my pick is going to be Mitch Gagnon getting the win in Canada. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Valerie Letourneau, who is 8-5, taking on UFC newcomer Vivian Pereira, who is 11-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Letourneau -180, the comeback on Pereira at +140. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Letourneau -175, Pereira's +155. So again, line margins tighten up a little bit. Nothing crazy action-wise coming into this fight. I mean, it's to be expected. You have Letourneau who, man, I mean, really gave it her all in her title shot against Jacek. That was an impressive performance despite the loss. I mean, I think her stock rose with her performance, with her toughness. Everything about that fight actually boosted her career up, in my opinion. But then, of course, coming back from that and losing to a girl like Carterwood and the way that she went about it. Of course, that was 125 pounds as a flyweight, but still, she didn't look that great in that fight. I mean, and it should have been a little bit more of a comfortable weight cut for her, because it is definitely a tough cut for Letourneau to get down to 115 pounds. So I was expecting her to perform a little bit better, and give credit to Calderwood. She just basically, I mean, smoked her in that fight. So impressive. Now, Letourneau is better than that. And I mean, I think she was just honestly having a bad day. She wasn't on, you know, who knows what the circumstances were surrounding her, because throughout her career, she's faced decent competition and she's performed really well. So this is a tough fight for a girl making her UFC debut. I mean, getting a fighter like Letourneau, I mean, the girl was just in title contention and you're making your UFC debut against her. So that tells you kind of what the UFC thinks of Pereira as well. I think they think that she could come in here and make an immediate impact if she gets a W over Letourneau. And looking at her film and what she's accomplished, I mean, her Brazilian record on paper, it's okay. I mean, it's not as bad as it could be, but it's obviously not compared to Letourneau's. You can't compare the two. But looking at her footage and what Pereira offers, to me, I mean, she reminds me a little bit of a kind of a John Lineker. I mean, she's short, stocky, powerful. She throws a take your head off. I mean, she pushes a fairly high pace as well. She does look for some takedowns, though. So she's a little bit different than Lineker. But that was the first thing that popped in my mind when I saw Pereira at first. I was like, man, this girl really brings it. And she's only 23 years old. She's young. So she's got a lot going for her. The problem is, if anything, she's small. I mean, she's not that tall. She's going to be thick. She's going to be strong. But, I mean, she's going to have definitely a reach disadvantage in this fight here. So if Letourneau fights smart and uses her distance, and, you know, she could outpoint Pereira or kind of wear her out as the fight goes, because this is going to definitely be the biggest test of Pereira's career. But with all of that being said, I still like the spot that she's in, and coming off of a head-scratcher performance for me from Letourneau against a young gun that's coming in with all that power as well. I think this is going to be interesting. I think the UFC is probably right in matching this, because Pereira has a legit shot to win this fight. So I'm going to go with the underdog here again. I think Pereira is going to step in here, make her UFC debut with a splash and get a huge notch on her resume. And if she does look good in this fight, obviously people are going to be hyping her up and talking about her possibly, you know, in title contention or whatnot. Depends on how she looks, obviously, in this fight. But I think the skill set's there. It's interesting to see if her size does matter in this fight or not. So my pick is going to be Pereira to pull off the upset.
What's really interesting about this fight is Letourneau was actually supposed to face another Brazilian named Poliana Botelho, and Botelho pulled out of the fight, and they replaced her with Vivian Pereira, and Vivian Pereira is actually the only fighter that has ever defeated Botelho in her MMA career. So Pereira, she is super tiny. I mean, she is 5 feet of fury. But she has fought at 115, 125, 135 during her run to get to 11-0 in the Brazil scene. She's won championships, I believe, at 135 and 115 as well in Brazil. So she's definitely a tough cookie, and she's not somebody you should be sleeping on. But that being said, she is giving up so much size in this fight. Letourneau is 7 inches taller than her. I mean, this is reminding me almost of those UFC fights where Stefan Struve faced Pat Barry and stuff. I mean, she is going to be towering over this little girl. That being said, Pereira packs some punch. She's compact. She's really aggressive. She has a lot of power in her hands, and she has a really aggressive ground game. So if she can dictate everything, then she'll make this fight interesting. But what my issue is, that Letourneau is able to utilize that reach. Just stick a jab in her face, keep her at bay, and Pereira's not going to have a lot of opportunities to fire back. The main concern for me with Letourneau is the fact that in her last two fights, she has taken a ton of damage. She was in a really competitive battle against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, but it was a fight where she clearly lost the last four rounds. she did take a lot of damage, and especially as that fight started to wear on. And then the Calderwood fight, I mean, she just got beat up on, and she really reacted strangely to getting hit in the body and kind of turned away from the action. So I am concerned about the damage she's taken in recent fights and if that's going to affect her coming into this one, because Pereira's no joke, and if she really cracks her with something hard, how's Letourneau going to respond? I expect this fight to be very interesting, but to me, it's I just think the size is going to be too much for Pereira to overcome. To me, Pereira seems like a fighter destined to fight in the atomweight division if and when the UFC ever creates it. And she could even potentially be the champion down there someday. I mean, because she is just so explosive and powerful. But for right now, I think as long as Letourneau has a good weight cut and as long as she can keep control of the distance, then this should be a fight that she wins. So I'm going to side with Valerie Letourneau here. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Olivier Aubin-Mercier, who is 9-2, taking on Drew Dober, who is 17-7 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Aubin-Mercier -210, the comeback on Dober at +160. To my surprise, the line got bet down a little bit. Right now it's Aubin-Mercier -170, comeback on Dober is +150. So 10 cent drop, not a huge drastic drop or anything. And I'm sure we'll see some two action on this fight, and Aubin-Mercier might climb back up a little bit. But this is an interesting fight for sure, because if you look at it, I mean, these guys are similar skill sets as well. I mean, both these guys are capable wrestlers. They can grind people out. They have a submission game to go along with it. The difference here is Aubin-Mercier obviously is the more technical fighter, jiu-jitsu wise on the ground for sure. His wrestling should be a little bit better overall than Dober's as well. But Dober does have the striking edge, I believe, on the feet, and he's getting more confident. And he's definitely, in my opinion, if you look at Dober fight by fight, he's really improving quite a bit. I mean, his win over Gonzalez, not a lot of people can give him a ton of credit for that, but Gonzalez was not an easy out at all. So that was a nice finish there. His fight against Holtzman, a lot of hype around Holtzman before that fight as well. And he was able to handle a pretty strong grinding type of fighter like Holtzman and get the W there as well. I know he had a setback against Escudero, and that's probably sitting in a lot of people's minds as well. But to me, that was almost a little bit flukish, in my opinion, honestly. Credit Escudero for the win, but still, I think Dober's improvement is honestly evident to me. I mean, he's been putting in the work, and it's been showing. I mean, he's definitely been, I believe he's training out in Colorado right now, and it's definitely helped his overall game. I mean, he's in with a solid team, and they're doing some good things with him, because I think he's getting better fight by fight for sure. So this is going to be a lot more competitive, I think, than people think, because it comes down to, can Aubin-Mercier get the takedowns and control Dober or not? I think he will have a little bit of success, but I don't know if it's going to be enough. And on the feet, Dober is going to be a little bit more dangerous. Dober is going to be scoring a little bit more along the way as well. So if he doesn't stay on his back for a long period of time, Dober can win this fight. So I do think it's another dog or pass situation in this spot. And I'm actually going to go out there and I'm going to pick Drew Dober to pull off the upset over Mercier. In my opinion, Mercier, again, he's a young, talented fighter. We're expecting him to improve fight by fight. And he's done that in some cases, but again, on the other hand, I don't think his improvement has been exactly what we all expected. I think that he should be a little bit better at this stage than what he currently is. And I think his stand up and his chin is a little bit suspect. And Dober, again, if he's able to keep it up, can kind of test that. So that's why I'm leaning a little bit more towards Dober. I think it's going to be a really close fight. If it hits the scorecards, 29-28 type of decision, split decision type of fight, who knows what the judges do these days on a close competitive fight. So it does favor Mercier, obviously, on the scorecards being in Canada. You would think it wouldn't hurt him, but you got to, you know, sometimes you got to throw that stuff out the window as well. So I can understand people picking Mercier, but I'm not. I'm going to go the other way. Again, not a confident pick, but I can see a route for Mercier to win this fight. But I like Dover's improvement more than anything else, and I'm going to pick him to win this fight.
And I have to come in here and disagree. I know Drew Dober has had some good moments in the UFC, but you got to remember he's been involved in some really crazy situations. I mean, he had that one phantom guillotine choke loss against Leandro Silva. He had the fight where Jamie Varner basically hurt himself and retired. And then his most recent win over Jason Gonzalez looked great, but you have to remember right before the big combination that he landed to set up the knockout, Gonzalez had just been kicked right in the junk and, you know, was still distracted by that. And he just, like, there was literally like seconds after they restarted the fight. So I don't know. I'm still, you know, not, all in on the Drew Dober train here. And my main issue with him is, I just don't think that he can stop Mercier's takedowns. Olivier Aubin-Mercier has such an aggressive ground game, and so far, the only people that have been able to beat him have been people that were, that had really good ground games themselves or had just such good takedown defense that they could force him into a stand-up fight. And that was Chad Laprise in his UFC debut ages ago for that tough finale. And then more recently, the Carlos Diego Ferreira fight, a guy that, you know, just was better than Mercier on the ground and forced him into some bad situations and was able to out-scramble him. And I'll admit, Drew Dober has improved. His ground game is a lot better. He showcased some good power in his last fight, but I just don't think his ground game is good enough to stop Mercier's takedowns. It kind of reminds me of the Tony Sims fight, where he's facing a guy with a lot of power that is aggressive on the feet and that has a decent ground game, and Mercier was just able to stifle him completely over the course of three rounds. He barely landed a punch the whole fight, but he still won. And I think that that's the kind of thing that can happen here. I think Dober will be scrappy. I think that he'll, you know, put up a fight, but I just see Mercier wearing him down with takedowns. So I'm going to side with Olivier Aubin Mercier. I think, you know, even though he is completely outclassed on the feet by Dober, I just don't think it stays on the feet that long over the course of three rounds. So my pick is going to be Mercier to probably win a decision. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Nikita Krylov, who is 21-4, taking on Misha Surkunov, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Krylov, -150, the comeback on Surkunov, +110. Bad line alert for sure, because right now it's Krylov actually the underdog, and Surkunov is at -125 as a favorite. Krylov is at +105. So yes, I've opened worse lines in the past, but overall, everybody coming in on Surkunov, and it's pretty clear to me why. I mean, both these guys are up-and-coming guys that a lot of people believe can make some waves in the light heavyweight division for sure, and they get respect, and they've definitely put some decent wins together. And I think, I mean, they're both young enough, I mean, especially Krylov, 24 years old, and Surkunov's not exactly old at 29, that they can keep on improving and climb that ladder. So matching these prospects in some way together here is pretty interesting, because Krylov is obviously known for his striking, Surkunov known for his grappling. And again, Krylov's submission loss to OSP, I think, is sticking in everybody's mind, and they're thinking, man, Surkunov, look what OSP did to him. Surkunov's going to be able to take him down and replicate that, but maybe even better. And Surkunov is definitely a more technical fighter than OSP on the ground. I'm just not sure it's going to work out quite like that. I think Krylov's getting underestimated with his ground ability overall. Again, I know it was a bad submission loss. He didn't look great in that fight. But overall, I think Krylov, he's okay on the ground as well. I think that people are just kind of counting him off. I mean, Surkunov, again, grappling all his credentials and all that, he's going to have the edge over Krylov. So Krylov definitely doesn't want to spend a lot of time on his back, because he probably will get submitted as the fight goes. But that being said, I think Krylov can sprawl and brawl well enough that if it does stay upright, I think Krylov does have the advantage on the feet. He's just a little bit more unorthodox. I think he mixes his strikes up better. There's more power behind every strike as well that Krylov throws, and he's more of a finisher. I mean, Surkunov, got to give him credit, he's more than a one-dimensional grappler these days. I mean, his striking is definitely decent enough to hang with people, even if he doesn't get the takedowns on the feet. He's improved that much. But that being said, I think Krylov still gets him on the feet. And if he can sprawl and brawl, he probably wins his fight. So I understand it. I understand the path to victory that everybody sees for Surkunov. I'm just going to go against the grain again, and I'm going to pick Krylov to win. I think Krylov is getting a little bit underestimated here, and I think he's able to get the W here. So hopefully he comes through, because I'm picking Krylov to get the W.
And I have to disagree. I mean, the main thing here for me that I just cannot get out of my head, and maybe Nikita Krylov, if he goes out there and has an amazing performance, can finally erase this memory for me, but it's the Oven St. Preux fight. Nikita Krylov stepped in there against Oven St. Preux early in his light heavyweight career and just got absolutely steamrolled. That fight was not really competitive at all, and then when St. Preux got it to the ground, even though he's not known for being an amazing offensive submission threat, St. Preux easily took out Krylov. I mean, Krylov, you know, he people make jokes about him at times, but for the most part, I mean, he is a fighter that I respect and has been on a really nice win streak. But I mean, you got to remember who he's beating: Stanislav Nedkov, Cody Donovan, Marcos Rogério de Lima, Francimar Barroso, Ed Herman. I think combined, those guys in the UFC light heavyweight division have won like maybe two or three fights, and they've lost about 10. So it's not a very impressive track record. Even though he's on a five-fight win streak, he has beaten absolutely nobody so far Barroso was probably his best win, and even he just lost a fight. So I can't give him too much respect yet, even though he's on that streak. Now, Misha Cirkunov, though, I mean, he looks like one of the next big things. I mean, his stand-up looks on target. It's improved. He showcased, he actually was out striking Ion Kutalaba, a guy that is super aggressive on the feet in Kutalaba's UFC debut. But where Cirkunov absolutely shines is on the floor. Granted, Cirkunov has not fought really anybody that great either. So this is going to be both guys' first serious test in a while. But, I just think Cirkunov is, his technique is just on a whole nother level. If Cirkunov gets this fight to the floor, I think it's going to be over extremely quickly. Cirkunov has finished all three of his UFC wins so far, and all three of them he's finished on the ground, whether it was ground and pound or submission. And while I do think that Krylov is game and he has power, and potentially if he lands a big head kick or something, Cirkunov could be in huge trouble. But for the most part, I just think Cirkunov gets him to the floor and submits him. So I have to side with Misha Cirkunov here. I just think his ground game is going to be too stifling. Now moving on to the first fight on the pay-per-view main card. We have a welterweight contest as Jordan Meehan returns from retirement with a 29-10 record to take on UFC newcomer Emil Meek, who is 8-2-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Meehan -130, the comeback on Meek at -110. Right now, it is Meehan currently -160. The comeback on Meek is at +140. So a little bit more action coming in on Meehan. And honestly, if it wasn't for the retirement talk and the circumstances again, how Meehan coming off a loss goes into retirement, then all of a sudden decides to come back, I probably would have opened Meehan a little bit higher, because stylistically, this is not a horrible fight for him. I mean, Meek is definitely no joke. He's a powerhouse. I mean, if you look back, there's footage of him and Paul Harris fighting over in Europe, and that's a fantastic fight. In fact, that's a fight that probably got Meek signed, is him just destroying Paul Harris. And I'm sure a lot of the fans out there are not disappointed to see that. But Meek is getting better. I mean, he's been in the game for a while. Again, over in Europe, has fought decent competition, not to level of Meehan. I mean, Meehan is still only 27 years old, and he's fought. I mean, if you look at his resume, it's nothing but impressive. So Meek's ability here to land something strong and kind of knock Meehan out or make it difficult for Meehan or make him quit actually as well, it's there. I mean, he does have a path to victory there. I mean, Meek with his aggressiveness and his power, I could see it kind of going that way. But overall, I mean, Meehan offensively is a stud as well. I mean, he's a very dangerous, capable finisher on the feet, as he's proven time and time again. He's obviously going to have a little bit of reach in the spot, which doesn't hurt him either. He's going to be motivated coming back, you know, into the UFC. He's going to want to prove a point. He knows how tough Meek is as well. He should be fairly prepared for this fight. And then on the ground, obviously, I favor Meehan overall as well. So Meehan is just a more complete fighter. It's just, to me, I open it this low because I don't know if I could trust him right now. I'm going to have to see how he performs here in this fight, because it's not an easy out against Meek. And then, you know, if he gets a pretty decent win over and he looks impressive, then he gets matched up again and wins another fight, then we'll start getting a little bit more respect back from Meehan. But that quit that I've seen in him, and it just wasn't against Alves, it's, you know, it's in the past. He's done in the past before as well. I just don't like it. I mean, when you see quit in a fighter, it's not a good betting spot to be in, honestly. So this is honestly an avoided type of fight for me. I think you stay away from it and just enjoy it, because it should be some fireworks. But overall, officially, I am going to pick Meehan to win. I just wish I could have a little bit more confidence in that.
When he's on, Jordan Meehan is one of the scariest fighters in the entire UFC roster. I mean, his striking is so technical, and he just picks people apart. I mean, I will never forget his performance against Dan Miller. I mean, that was, at that moment, Dan Miller was one of the toughest guys on the whole roster, and Meehan just absolutely destroyed him. And I think it was the first time that Miller had ever been finished either, and he did it in the first round. I mean, it was just something that was out of nightmares almost. Now, he has had his ups and downs. When Meehan is winning fights, he's amazing. He is aggressive. He gets in his opponent's face. He backs them down. He gets them to just almost give up. But when he's losing fights, as Nick mentioned, there's just something going on in his brain where he just starts to panic. It happened in the Matt Brown fight where he started so strong and then just almost gave up. And then the Thiago Alves fight, he had him on the ropes, had him all the way down to the wire in the first round. Basically, Alves got saved by the bell. And then Meehan, you know, punched himself out a little bit. And then Meehan ate a big kick to the body and just crumpled in the second round. So I'm definitely a little concerned about what happens if Meehan starts strong and isn't able to put Meek away. Because Meek is the type of guy with a lot of power. He's definitely dangerous, as you saw with his fight against Paul Harris. Paul Harris, you know, went for the leg. Meek just started popping him in the face, and Paul Harris went out. I mean, there's a lot of great fighters that have not been able to avoid the leg lock from Paul Harris and ended up succumbing to it. So including in the UFC at both welterweight and middleweight. So major props to Emil Meek, but I just don't think that he's on Meehan's level. Maybe in terms of pure punching power, but that's about it. I just don't think he's as technical as Meehan. I don't think he can keep up with Meehan's pace. And unless he catches Meehan, I don't see him winning. So I have to side with Jordan Meehan as well. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Tim Kennedy, who is 18-5, taking on Kelvin Gastelum, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have Kennedy minus 180 to come back on Gastelum at plus 140. Right now it's Kennedy minus 145, Gastelum's at plus 125. This was definitely a difficult line to set. I mean, Kennedy has been one of the best middleweights in the world for some time now. Even before he made his UFC debut, he's proven that time and time again. Well-rounded fighter. I mean, his ability on the ground is, man, it's fun to watch this guy get some takedowns and utilize his grappling skill. I mean, it's top-notch. There's not too many better in the sport. I mean, obviously, Jacare, and there's a few, but Kennedy's right up there underneath that kind of level. I mean, he's phenomenal on the ground, and he's able to dictate and control the tempo of most fights. I mean, even one fight that sticks out to me in my memory is the Bisping fight. Bisping has decent takedown defense, and he's continued to improve his takedown defense. And Kennedy went in there and did what he had to do and get those takedowns and won the fight. So, I mean, Kennedy's able to get people down that you wouldn't sometimes expect or would be a difficult matchup. So Kennedy is a beast on the ground for sure. But the problem is he's been out since that Romero loss, and that was back in September 2014. And that was a vicious fight. I mean, devastating fight, devastating loss, because a lot of people believe Kennedy, including myself, should have got the nod. I mean, it was really strange how that whole thing played out. But that being said, Kennedy's 37 years old. He's not getting any younger, obviously. He's been out of the cage for a couple years, and he's fighting a legit fighter in Gastelum. I mean, he's moved up to 185 for this fight because obviously he can't make 170. On a steady basis, which is unfortunate for him, but he has experience at 185 pounds and he hasn't looked bad. So Gastelum's not going to be really out of his element in this fight. And I think in the stand-up game, Gastelum's actually the better fighter. He's been improving a little bit more and he can be a little bit more dangerous on the feet. So Kennedy's going to have to get Gastelum down on the ground, control him, try to use his jiu-jitsu skill to win this fight as well and his control. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do that for three steady rounds, because again, there's a lot of conditioning in my opinion, questions. I mean, his cardio, Kennedy, if you look at his last few fights, his cardio is definitely not getting any better either. I mean, he seems to be slowing down a little bit as the fight progresses. So there's a way that I can see Kennedy maybe getting round one and then losing the next couple rounds to Gastelum, getting outpointed. So this is not an easy fight at all for either guy here. And again, it was difficult to set in the line because of all the circumstances surrounding this. But I have to side with the early action as well. I think Gastelum probably hangs in there enough that, again, even if he loses round one, I think he could probably turn it around in round two and round three and steal a close competitive type of decision. And again, at 37 years old, we just don't know when that chin's going to go for Kennedy either. So Gastelum has enough power, even at middleweight, that he could test that. So I think there's a little bit more reasons to like Gastelum in this fight, considering Kennedy's been out for so long and all the, again, circumstances surrounding this fight. So I'll pick Gastelum to get the W here.
Yeah, my biggest question mark with this fight is Tim Kennedy's long layoff. He hasn't fought since the whole Stoolgate thing happened against Yoel Romero in his fight against him in 2014. So it's been well over 2 years now. And that was a fight where, you know, he had a good moment where he was landing some good shots at the end of the second round. Granted, he did grab Yoel Romero's glove to be able to hang on to him and land some more punches. But something, you know, unfortunate happened in that fight. Little extra break in between rounds. And then, boom, Yoel Romero just massacres Tim Kennedy. But you know what? Yoel Romero has proven himself since that fight. He has the wins over Machida. He just scored a win over Chris Weidman. So he's stayed active. He's been out there just going after his opponents and getting racking up wins. And Tim Kennedy has just been on the sidelines complaining on Twitter for over 2 years. So It's time to put up or shut up with Kennedy. He was a guy that at one point was one of the top middleweights in the world. He has a win over Michael Bisping, the current champ. So he's definitely an elite middleweight. But when you're out this long and you're at his age, which is in the mid-30s, then you have to be a bit concerned. I mean, the guy's 37 years old. You can't take 2 years off if you're that age. Now, Kelvin Gastelum, he's a welterweight, but he's fought at middleweight before, and he's basically being punished with this fight because he was supposed to fight Donald Cerrone at UFC 205, didn't even show up to the weigh-ins, and the UFC was like, okay, you got to fight at middleweight now, and they're not just fight at middleweight, but take on a top 10 middleweight in the world. But honestly, I think this is a winnable fight for Gastelum. He is way younger than Kennedy. He's quicker than Kennedy. I think that he's just as good, if not better, on the feet than Kennedy. And then on the ground, I can see Kennedy winning the grappling exchanges. Gastelum did get taken down by Neil Magny in one of his more recent losses. And Kennedy definitely does have a strong takedown game. He was able to take down Michael Bisping in his win against Bisping. So I think that could make this very interesting. But for the most part, I think this is a really competitive fight, especially on the feet. Kennedy was actually supposed to face Rashad Evans at UFC 205. That got scrapped because Evans medicals, and then he was supposed to fight Evans on this card, scrapped again because Evans medicals. They're both champing at the bit to get in there. They've been training to compete for an event all the way an extra month, basically. So I expect both guys to be well prepared, but Gastelum, I just think he's got a little bit more. He's coming off an impressive win over Johnny Hendricks, where he looked great. His stand-up was sharp. He just outworked Hendricks, both in the stand-up and the clinch. And I think if he can just mix things up a little bit and avoid getting put on his back repeatedly by Kennedy, then this is a fight that he can win. For me, there's just too many question marks with Kennedy's age and long layoff. So I'm going to side with Kelvin Gastelum as well. I think he can win a decision, if not potentially knock Kennedy out. Now, moving on to the featherweight division, we have Cub Swanson, who is 23-7, taking on Duho Choi, who is 14-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Another tough one. I opened Choi -140, the comeback on Swanson, even money, and immediately the fight got bet up. Choi, the hype is legit. It's real. I mean, there's definitely a lot of supporters out there believing that this guy can be a serious threat at 145 pounds, I think, for the title. And just the way he fights, I mean, striking ability is off the charts. The guy's precise. His accuracy with power, everything about him. I mean, it's very impressive. I mean, if you look at how the UFC's kind of bringing him along as well, it's been pretty decent. I mean, Cecilia, based off the last couple, Cecilia and Tavares, I think those are good steps and stages. Now he's fighting a guy that's legitimately one of the best 145 pounders in the world in Cub Swanson, and a win over Swanson just elevates him to another level and gets him immediately into title talk considerations, honestly. So this is a big, important fight for Choi. A lot of people believe that he can go out there and get the job done. Now, again, if he wins this fight, it's going to be because of his striking. I mean, we've seen Swanson recently have some struggles in that department. I mean, if you look, again, Swanson's been a class act for sure. I mean, throughout his career, and he's been improving as well. But if you look at a couple fights back where he lost to Max Holloway as a striker, obviously, I mean, that's what Holloway does best as well. I mean, he was struggling in that fight. You got to credit Holloway for getting the submission win over him in that spot as well. But that being said, I can see a lot of similarities. I mean, Choi having success on the feet against Swanson. But I'm going to say this, and it's very true. A lot of people would not agree with it, but this is the biggest fight in Choi's career because this is the toughest matchup. I mean, definitely Swanson is not just a one-dimensional fighter. I mean, the guy has all the tools. He's got power on the feet. He's a good striker. I mean, not on Choi's level. So if they stand there and strike it out, of course, Choi should win the striking battle more times than not. But on the ground is where Swanson, I think, excels over Choi in this spot as well. So his wrestling is not that bad. Swanson does go for the wrestling and the takedowns during his fights, and he knows that he's going to have to utilize some of that aspect of his game against Choi here, no doubt about it. I mean, obviously, he's a smart fighter. They're going to game plan well for Swanson. So I think he's going to be prepared in this fight. And if he doesn't get knocked out, man, we're going to have a fight on our hands here. So I wouldn't exactly count Swanson out as much as everybody else is, although I do think Choi probably gets the job done. And again, I like the way the UFC's kind of brought him along. I mean, this is the next step in his career, and if he wins it, he's the man right now. So I do like Choi to probably get the finisher, probably knock Swanson out, but I think it's going to be a lot tougher than people think. And I think at the current price, there's no way you could bet Choi at minus 220. Even if he goes out there and destroys Swanson in a minute, I mean, it's you have to see what this guy can do against this level of competition, I think, first before you can kind of lay that kind of juice against a guy like Swanson. So I am going to pick Choi. I think he does probably get the W here, but it's not a bet that I would make at minus 220.
I'm a huge fan of Duho Choi. I mean, this kid is so sharp on the feet. It's just, he doesn't look like it because he's just so skinny, but just there's so much power that he's able to generate with his hands, both with straight punches and hooks, timing knees and head kicks. I mean, he can just mix it up. And Cub Swanson on the other side has looked really good in his last couple fights. It looks like he changed things up a little bit. He went back to his roots a little more. He started, he picked up some quality wins over the likes of Hakran Diaz and then most recently Tetsuya Kawajiri. So I have to give him some props. He looked great in those wins and I thought pretty relatively one-sided performances, but I think Duho Choi is just on another level. Now, maybe this could be a fight where Choi is jumping a little too much too soon. I mean, he's just coming off of a win over Thiago Tavares, and Tavares was a fringe top 15 guy, and now all of a sudden he's facing a guy in the top 5. So this is definitely a huge, huge test for him, but I think it's a test he can pass. Choi's stand-up is just so sharp. He hasn't shown any issues with his chin whatsoever, and I think if Choi connects with something really solid on Cub Swanson, then he can put him out cold. Swanson has had some issues with fighters that pressure him, and I expect Choi to take the center of the cage and just start stalking Swanson down, looking for the kill shot from the moment the fight starts. One thing that is at Choi's detriment is I don't think his ground game's that great. It's way more defensive than anything. He doesn't really offer a submission or really great takedown defense. He definitely doesn't try to take people down. So if Swanson can get his ground game going, then there's an opportunity here for him to pull this out. I mean, you got to remember, Swanson had that great fight against Dustin Poirier where a lot of the fight took place on the canvas, and he ended up winning that one. So if he can force this to the floor, then I think that'll be a lot better for Swanson than if he just keeps this as a stand-up fight because he is playing with fire. Duho Choi has insane power, and it doesn't take much with him. I mean, he can just flick that right hand out and put people out cold. So I'm siding with Duho Choi. I don't think that Swanson can get the ground game going over the course of 3 rounds, and I think at some point Choi connects and probably puts him out. So my pick is Duho Choi. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a welterweight contest between Donald Cerrone, who is 31-7 with one no contest, and Matt Brown, who is 22-15. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened this one minus 245 for Cerrone, the comeback on Brown at plus 175. Right now, looking over five dimes is 280 for Cerrone. Brown is at plus 240. So even with that high price tag, people are not hesitating to bet Cerrone here against Brown. It's a shame, man. Brown has been one of those guys. He's such a warrior. He is just one of the best fighters to watch because he gives it his all. The guy's a finisher. It's kind of kill or be killed type of fighting mentality for him. And he obviously comes out ahead far more than he doesn't. But this is a tough matchup. I mean, even at 170 pounds with Cerrone moving up, I mean, the guys look like a beast. I mean, this division definitely seems to suit him fairly well. I mean, his win over Story was, I'm still scratching my head. I can't believe he dominated Rick Story like he did. So that credit to Cerrone in that spot. He's looking great. He's looking a lot more confident. And I think stylistically, this is kind of a tough matchup for Brown because, I mean, there's a lot of similarities between the two really good strikers that can put your lights out. No doubt they mix things up so well, diverse striking games, everything about them. But I think Cerrone just has a little bit of an edge on the feet. I think also Cerrone has the edge, obviously, on the ground as well. I think Cerrone is going to utilize some of that, get some takedowns here. His wrestling has looked good, even at 170 pounds. I mean, he's looked great. So I think Cerrone has a wrestling advantage. He'll probably stand and bang for a little while, and then he might look to take this fight to the floor and start controlling things on the ground, win by submission over Brown. Or, again, if it stays upright, I still think Cerrone is the better striker of the two, and he probably wins on the feet more times than not. You just can never count a guy like Matt Brown out. I mean, I know he's coming off that devastating, surprising knockout loss to Ellenberger, and he had a concussion there. So that makes me kind of hesitate as well as far as obviously picking Brown. I'm not going to anyway. I mean, I was going to lean to Cerrone, but I think that makes it even a little bit more comfortable picking Cerrone, I should say that, at this point. So my pick is Cerrone. I won't get into it. Most of you guys know what both these guys have to offer, and they're both tremendous fighters. So it should be a good fight, hopefully while it lasts, and I'm going to pick Cerrone to get the W here too.
And I'm in complete agreement on this one. Donald Cerrone is just a significantly technically superior striker compared to Matt Brown. And sometimes the less technical striker can make up for it with aggression and volume and pressure and pace. But I don't think Matt Brown can throw at the same pace as Donald Cerrone. I think Cerrone can just mix things up with his hands, with his feet, and just really frustrate Matt Brown here. Brown is an aggressive striker, but Cerrone can just switch things up from low leg kicks where he's chewing up your legs to nasty body kicks where he's folding you in half to head kicks where he's just knocking you off and putting you out. And then he has power in his hands too. So, and then if you take that away from him and you go to the ground, Cerrone has one of the better ground games too. So, you know, he is just so well-rounded and he has been so dominant in his run at welterweight. I was thinking at some point he would run into somebody that was just too big and strong for him, and it just hasn't happened. The last performance against Rick Story just sold me on him that welterweight is where he belongs. You know, that performance where Story just could not keep pressuring Cerrone and eventually just started getting blasted on the feet and put out, that was the performance where I think Donald Cerrone cemented himself to me as a top contender in the welterweight division. And to be completely honest, Matt Brown is not a top contender anymore. I mean, he had a great run where he had some amazing performances and rose through the ranks quickly. And he's had some competitive fights against some top guys, but he is not one of the top guys. He just, you saw that in the last fight against Ellenberger. I mean, Ellenberger clearly is not a top 15 fighter. And he just absolutely mopped the floor with Matt Brown. Now, if Ellenberger can do it, I definitely think Cerrone can do it. I think the kicking game is going to be really, really impactful here. And I just don't see Matt Brown being able to stand up to those kicks. So I have to side with Donald Cerrone here. I think that while Brown is game and tough as hell and tough as nails and a great veteran, I think, time is starting to pass him by a little bit. And when you suffer that first ever TKO loss in the UFC, the second one usually doesn't come much further behind. So I think Donald Cerrone doesn't just win. I think he can put Matt Brown out. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have an interim featherweight title fight between Max Holloway, who is 16-3, and Anthony Pettis, who is 19-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Another tough one. I mean, I realize what Holloway's accomplished recently is tremendous, and he deserves to be a decent favorite in this fight. But still, I mean, Anthony Pettis is Anthony Pettis. So, I mean, the ultra-popular fighter that is an amazing striker, even though he hasn't looked that great in his recent fights, he's still an outstanding fighter, and he's getting a title shot for a reason, even though a lot of people kind of disagree with it. I understand that too. And his debut fight against Oliveira at 145 pounds, he did gas a little bit in that fight, but he still got the W there. And I'm expecting him to look a little bit better, the second time around at 145. So striker versus striker type of matchup. And man, I mean, are we in for a treat here? Both these guys are elite level strikers. It basically comes down to, for me, I mean, can Holloway push a higher pace throughout the entire fight and kind of gas Pettis out? I mean, we'll see again. His cardio will definitely get tested in this spot. And Holloway can continue to put that pace on, I think, for five strong rounds, where Pettis might start to fade a little bit as we go in rounds two, rounds three, rounds four, one out two as well, if it even lasts that long. I mean, both these guys are able to finish a fight quickly as well. So, we could see this end fairly quickly, maybe round one or two. So anything can happen, honestly, in this spot, but the favoritism has to be on Holloway's side. I mean, just with what he's accomplished recently, if you look at, I mean, who the guy's beaten, it's been nothing but impressive. I mean, Brian and I were kind of talking about this off air a little bit too. I mean, it's Swanson, Oliveira, Stevens, Lamas, and now he's fighting Pettis. So it's not like he's been fighting bums to get the shot. I mean, he's been fighting the top tier guys at 145 pounds. He's confident his mental game set. He knows what he can do here against Pettis. He really, truly, in his mind, believes he's the best 145 pounder in the world right now. And to me, it's hard to disagree with that from what we've seen recently. I mean, again, Conor McGregor coming back down to 145, then we could change things up, but it doesn't look like he's going to be there. So right now, Holloway probably is the best 145 pounder in the world. And that's despite Jose Aldo. I mean, that's maybe a little bit unfair to him, and that would be a great battle. And I think that obviously Jose Aldo could have something to say with that, and it would be a tough matchup for Holloway there for sure. But I mean, with the momentum on his side and him fighting a little bit more steady and consistently, that's kind of why I'm putting him ahead of Jose Aldo even right now. So no disrespect to Jose Aldo, though. I know he's still the man despite that Conor loss. I understand that, and I have nothing but respect to him. And I want to see Jose Aldo versus Holloway. That would be fantastic. Jose Aldo versus Pettis would be fantastic as well. So but there is a lot to like about the featherweight division, even with Conor stepping out right now. I mean, there's going to be all sorts of good matchups. So the winner here going to put himself in a sweet spot to maybe duplicate possibly what Conor McGregor was able to do. Probably not that quick, obviously, but put the second loss in Jose Aldo's career on his resume. And I think with Holloway's skill set and the pace that he sets, it's not out of the question he could do that either. So a lot to like about Holloway. I'm going to pick him to win this fight because what I've seen from him recently impresses me a little bit more than what I've seen from Pettis. But again, it's nearly 2-1 right now. In fact, the current line is Holloway minus 210. The comeback on Pettis is plus 175. I'm not going to disrespect Pettis that much. I think that Pettis is still going to come to fight, obviously, and he's still an elite level striker. I mean, technically speaking, there's not too many better than him, and the way he mixes everything up as well. So this is going to be a fight. It should be a fun fight, but I still have to side a little bit more with Holloway. He has the momentum right now. And I think right now he is just a tad bit better.
In terms of technical ability, I have to think that Anthony Pettis is the better overall fighter. He's a guy with a tremendous ground game off of his back, really active. He has really great technique on the feet, some of the nastiest kicks in the history of any division, lightweight and lower, with, you know, the Showtime kick, the head kicks of Joe Lozon, the body kicks to Donald Cerrone. So, you know, this is a guy that can just fold people in half with his kicks, but for some reason, he's kind of lost it. It started with that Dos Anjos fight, obviously, where Dos Anjos just put so much pressure on him, backed him up, took him down and just beat him up over the course of 5 rounds. Then the Eddie Alvarez fight, where he started strong, but Alvarez just pressured him, took him down, beat him up, and then the Edson Barboza fight where he just got outpointed technically. So this is an issue where, especially in the Alvarez and the Dos Anjos fights, where Anthony Pettis just does not handle pressure really well. Even his title defense against Gilbert Melendez. Melendez pressured him a lot in that first round, backed him up repeatedly, and then Melendez started to run out of steam. So even that, in that fight, Melendez, you know, used pressure successfully against Pettis. And he just has not been able to show that he can respond positively to pressure with good counters, that, and he can't back people off like that. So I think if Max Holloway does what he does best, which is push forward, be aggressive, throw a lot of volume, put the pressure on his opponent with a very aggressive stand-up attack, then I don't see how Anthony Pettis can win, barring a really heavy body kick or a really heavy kick to the head, because Max Holloway has been able to do this to everyone he's fought so far. And he has been, as Nick mentioned, and as we talked about before the show, that he's been fighting some really, really impressive fighters, and he's just making people look silly out there. So for me, I just think the pressure of Max Holloway is just going to be too much. I know that Anthony Pettis is going to have a little bit of reach, but it doesn't matter. Holloway fights so long because he is just throwing straight punches constantly and backing his opponents up. And Anthony Pettis just does not perform well when he's moving backwards. So what I see happening in this fight is if they're standing at kickboxing range and having a normal fight where they're both just kind of circling and just waiting and feinting, that's a fight Anthony Pettis is going to be great in. But if Holloway's moving forward, if he's stalking repeatedly, like aggressively, and Pettis is having to circle on the outside or just repeatedly back up, I can see Holloway just backing Pettis up into the fence even, and then just go into town with combinations until Pettis can circle away. So I just think that overall, over the course of five rounds especially, that Holloway's just going to wear Pettis down with that constant pressure. And unlike, you know, the Melendez fight, I don't see Holloway slowing down at all. This is a guy that can just keep an insane pace going for 25 minutes, no problem. You just look at their stats. Both guys are, you know, very similar in terms of accuracy, but Anthony Pettis just does not throw at that same pace because he's looking for those, you know, those right moments to attack, because that's what a really good technical striker does. But Holloway just doesn't care. He fights at a pace that's usually twice what Anthony Pettis usually fights. And I just don't think Pettis can keep up with it unless he lands, you know, just a nasty blow that takes Holloway's legs out from under him early in the fight. And I just don't see that happening. So I think Max Holloway can either win a decision or maybe he can take Pettis out late, but Pettis is tough as nails. He survived 25 minutes of just getting beat on by Rafael Dos Anjos. So I expect Max Holloway to probably just win a decision here. So my pick is going to be Holloway. Now, typically we would be ending the podcast here, but as we mentioned earlier, we're going to go over our UFC 102 picks as well, although they will be significantly more condensed. So UFC 102 does take place this Friday in Albany, New York, so very close to the Toronto event. So, Nick, let's get started on our UFC 102 picks. And again, these aren't going to be full breakdowns. We're not going to give out all the odds and everything. We're just going to be giving out our picks and maybe a very brief explanation why we made our pick. So, Nick, first fight for UFC Fight Night 102. Who do you like in the strawweight bout between Juliana Lima, who's 8-3, and JJ Aldrich, who's 2-1?
This is actually a tough fight. I mean, obviously, you got to favor Lima because of her ground game and her ability to grind out fighters. And that's kind of been Aldridge's kryptonite in the past. I mean, if you look at the Ultimate Fighter, she's a tough 23 vet. That's basically how she lost that fight as well, on the ground. And she struggled in the past that way. But if you look closely, I mean, her takedown defense isn't all that bad. So she's going to test Lima here. I don't think it's going to be an easy fight. And in fact, on the feet, Aldridge is the better striker, I think, overall. So she can, if she can sprawl and brawl, she's got a legit shot to win this fight. But I still got to pick with lean a little bit more towards Lima Way. I mean, she's the better grinder, so it's hard not to think that she could control a little bit more of the action. But man, this fight's definitely going to get interesting.
Yeah, I like Juliana Lima as well. Aldrich being a training partner of Rose Namajunas, she definitely has a lot of potential, but she doesn't really have any good finishing ability, in my opinion. And she just fought about 3 weeks ago, went to decision in Invicta 20. So this is a really quick turnaround for her, and unless she took absolutely zero damage, I think this is going to be a really tough fight. And I think Juliana Lima does get those takedowns, and I think that stifles Aldrich a little bit. So I'm going to side with Juliana Lima as well. So moving on, Keith Barish taking on Ryan James. Barish is 5-0 with one no contest. James is 8-1. Who do you like, Dick?
Tough one, because, I mean, both these guys have been inactive now for a little while. Obviously, Barish has been hurt. I mean, his debut against Drysdale, he got beat there. He got submitted, but to make matters worse, I mean, his knee, the way he landed, I mean, he definitely tore up his knee in that fight, and he had time to recover and heal. But then he's basically been injury riddled throughout his career. And James, there's a lot of question marks around him as well. I mean, it's been some time, but basically this comes down to is James' grappling ability. Can he finish Barish on the feet, or I'm sorry, on the ground? And I think it is a possibility. I think he is the better jiu-jitsu artist, and I think that Barish might oblige him in having a good ground battle with him as well. But if this fight stays on the feet, I think it's going to be pretty competitive as well. So what I'm saying is right now, even at the price tag at -270 for James, I think the line's a tad high, because I think Barish is probably better than most of us think he is. And he's going to probably perform a little bit better than he did against Drysdale. So I think it's a dog or pass situation, but I still have to lean a little bit more towards James. I think what I've seen from him thus far is probably enough to get him the W here.
And I'm going to go the other way. I like Keith Barish. You got to remember, UFC debut, it was against Robert Drysdale, who tested positive for steroids, one of the best grapplers in the world, and it was at light heavyweight. So he's dropping a weight class. He's taking on someone that is not even half as good of a grappler as Robert Drysdale. And I think Keith Barish can hold his own on the feet, and I think his wrestling is going to come into play, and I think he can get top position and maybe beat up on Ryan James a little bit. So I actually am siding with the underdog here, so I'm going with Keith Barish. Now, in a lightweight bout, we have Frankie Perez, who's 10-2, taking on Mark Diakasey, who is 10-0. So, Nick, who do you like in this one?
You gotta lean to Casey. I mean, first of all, Perez, I thought, was retired, and he's not, obviously, as well. But I mean, he's young enough that he shouldn't have retired, but I do respect, his opinion. But coming back here, I mean, where's his mind at? How serious is he about fighting an MMA fight these days in the UFC and the premier organization of all of the world and fighting a guy that's a hyped prospect in Dicasey? So I think this is a tough matchup. If Perez can get him down, it's going to get interesting for sure, because I think that's still Dicasey's kryptonite, is a good grappler that could control him, possibly give him fits on the ground with the jiu-jitsu game as well. But it's going to be interesting because Dicasey is definitely the more talented, more athletic guy. And I think he could probably, even if he gets taken down, probably manages to get back up on his feet. And on the feet, he definitely has a significant advantage. Just a nasty type of striker that mixes things up so well. Talk about unorthodox. I mean, but clean, precise, and powerful. So it's hard to pick against Dicasey in this spot.
Yeah, Perez did come out of retirement after being away for 1 year for this fight. But more than that, it just seems like the UFC is throwing him to the wolves. Dicasey is a guy that there's a lot of hype behind. This guy has just insane finishing ability. Dicasey is so physically strong, so powerful on the feet, so explosive. And Perez had a great win before he retired. He knocked out Sam Stout in under a minute and then called it quits. So he showcased some improved stand-up, and before that he does have some good wrestling. So if he can take Dicasey down and keep him down, he could potentially steal this one. And he is fighting pretty close to his backyard, being a training partner of Frankie Edgar. But overall, I think Dicasey catches him at some point. Perez got steamrolled in his UFC debut by a fighter that I think Dicasey could beat as well. So I'm going to side with Dicasey. I think at some point he connects and puts Perez out. So moving on, we have a featherweight contest between Thiago Trader, who is 25-2 with one no contest, taking on UFC newcomer Shane Burgos, who is 7-0. So Nick, who do you like for this one and why?
I'll tell you what, Trader definitely rebounded nicely and got himself some respect back, I think, but in his last performance. But man, Burgos, what I see from him thus far, I know it's his UFC debut, I really like. I mean, the guy's definitely got some power on the feet. I think he's the type of fighter that his confidence is growing fight by fight. You could watch some of his earlier fights and see that, to the point where sometimes he gets a little gutsy, and his defense is definitely not is what you'd like to see. But at the same time, Burgos has a ton of power. I think he could keep this fight upright. And if he does, he should have the striking advantage over Trader, to make it simple. So it should be a fun fight, though. I mean, and obviously a -170 price tag for Burgos, it's not like he's a huge favorite. So we should see a competitive fight. But I like the debuting Burgos here to get the W, probably by finish.
Yeah, I really like Shane Burgos. Even though he's taking this fight on short notice, this is a guy, this is his backyard. He's a Tiger Shulman guy. Another one of the long line of, you know, people like Jimmy Rivera, Lyman Good, formerly Uriah Hall before he left. But, I think Shane Burgos might be one of the next big things. This guy has a great stand-up game, good power on the feet, and, he has some nasty, ground game as well. So I can see Burgos beating Trader up on the feet, and I can see him winning the fight on the ground too. Trader does have some good technique in the stand-up. He's strong in the clinch, but I just see Burgos getting the better of him everywhere. And Trader's chin is a huge question mark. And Burgos, he has not been rocked at all, even though his defense isn't the best. So I'm definitely siding with Burgos, even though it's short notice. I think that this guy could be somebody to really keep your eye on moving forward. Next up, we have a middleweight fight. Andrew Sanchez, the winner of recently of The Ultimate Fighter, who is 9-2, taking on Trevor Smith, who is 14-6. Nick, who do you like in this one and why?
Man, everybody loving Dirty Sanchez. And I understand Andrew Sanchez definitely stylistically, this could be a tough matchup for Smith, because if Sanchez is able to sprawl and brawl, he's definitely the better striker on the feet. And I think he could do more damage. And of course, we can't really trust Smith's chin. I realize and understand that. But man, I mean, let's give some credit to Smith. Look at his performances as of late. He's fought some pretty heavy hitters, and he's been okay, and he's been fighting a smart game plan. His conditioning is even improving as well. So Smith is a fit to deal with on the ground. I mean, he's better than most guys. There's no doubt about that, in my opinion, on the ground in this weight class. So Sanchez, even though Sanchez is a wrestler, grappler in his own right, I still think Smith is better on the ground here. So I think Trevor Smith is going to do Trevor Smith. And I think if he doesn't get clipped with something early, he probably wins his fight. So even at a dog, I mean, at +170, I think people are a little bit insane. I know opening much lower, people bet Sanchez up, but I don't know. I mean, I could see, obviously, like I said, Sanchez winning by knockout. I don't think he's going to be able to control Smith on the ground. I think Smith is going to give him fits. So I think the ground prevails here, and I'm picking Smith to win.
Yeah, I completely agree. Andrew Sanchez and Trevor Smith have similar skill sets, although Sanchez is a bit younger, and Sanchez, in my opinion, is definitely the more technically superior striker. But Smith is a just – He has adapted his fighting style to his own ability really well. And you saw that in his last couple fights where he just ground people into the dirt and was able to win decisions. So, or submit his opponent or TKO them. I mean, just, he's been looking great and he just, wears on people. He grinds on them. And I think if he gets a hold of Sanchez, then the fact that Sanchez is better on the feet means nothing because Smith will just be on top of him grinding away and potentially wearing him down and either getting a late finish or winning a decision as a huge underdog. So yeah, I like Trevor Smith as well. Next up, we have another middleweight fight. The man that Trevor Smith just beat in his last bout, Joe Gigliotti, 7-1, taking on UFC newcomer, veteran Gerald Meerschaert, who is 24-8. So, Nick, who do you like in this one?
This one's tough. I think I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Meerschaert here, but it's not a confident pick. And again, everybody betting him up, actually. It opened like 150, now it's minus 225. So a lot of people think that Meerschaert – pardon my pronunciation, but they think that he's going to come in here and basically replicate the Smith bout against Gigliotti, and maybe he does. I mean, I don't think Meerschaert is as capable on the ground as Smith. I mean, I think he does have a really good ground game, so he might be able to control and even win this fight by sub, even though Smith wasn't able to. I mean, styles make fights for sure, but I still give the edge to Smith on the ground over Meerschaert. So I think Gigliotti actually – he gained some respect by me. I mean, he fought that ground battle against Smith and he didn't get finished and he took that fight on short notice. I know he gassed along the way and it wasn't the best thing for him, but the guy showed toughness. He showed heart. He has a lot of power to go along with. I mean, that wrestling that he's got, that's not bad. So this is going to be more of a toss up fight than I think people even realize. So I'm going to pick Meerschaert to win, but I'm not ultra confident. I think it's a dog or pest situation here for sure.
Yeah. Joe Gigliotti, Gerald Meerschaert. This should be a competitive fight, but it's all going to boil down to if Meerschaert can take him down and Meerschaert can grind it out and maybe in the clinch a little bit, or if Gigliotti can get some space and just start teeing off with his explosive power. Gigliotti is one of the smaller guys in the middleweight division. He's compact, but he is super strong, super powerful, and he definitely has an ability to finish anybody. And he also has some good wrestling. So if he can get top position and stay there, he'd be in good shape. And if he can keep his distance and then step in and land some monster strikes, he'll be in really good shape as well. It's just against Trevor Smith, Smith was just constantly on him in his UFC debut. So he wasn't really able to find that space. So I think people are disrespecting him a little bit here. So and Meerschaert, he's a veteran, savvy, but, not really that great at anything. He does have a pretty good submission game, but I don't see him submitting Gigliotti either. So for the most part, unless Meerschaert can stick to him like glue, like Trevor did, then I think Gigliotti can connect with something big at some point and potentially put him out. So I'm going to side with Gigliotti. Next up, we have a welterweight fight. Randy Brown, who's 8-1, Brian Camozzi, 7-2. So Nick, who do you like in this one?
Really good matchup. I mean, two rising prospects. They have a lot of similarities in their ability. I mean, both these guys can stand and bang. Both these guys can compete on the floor, and they both have nasty guillotine chokes. I mean, that's how they've been winning fights recently as well. So sneaky good subs on the ground, and with the length that they have on the feet, they're tough matchups for a lot of people. So UFC matching these guys up together makes it interesting for sure. Obviously, Camozzi's benefiting from his brother's experience and the training and everything that he's done along the way. It's helped him get better and better, improve probably at a faster pace. But Brown's still going to be a handful for him, I think. If this hits a scorecards, I do believe Brown will outwork Camozzi. If it ends inside, though, it's going to be interesting. I think either one of these guys can finish. But I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Brown for right now.
Yeah, I have to side with Randy Brown as well. Brian Camozzi's good. He has good, strong finishing ability, both with his submission game and his striking. But I think Randy Brown fights longer. He has good power from distance. Brown's submission game should neutralize Camozzi's submission game. So I really don't think the ground will be a huge factor here. And if it just stays a stand-up fight, I think the longer fighter that can use their reach is going to win. So I have to side with Randy Brown, even though Brian Camozzi is a talented newcomer. Next up, we have the last fight of the preliminary card. Justine Kish in a strawweight battle, 5-0, taking on UFC newcomer Ashley Yoder, who's 4-1. So who do you like in this one, Nick?
I guess you got to lean a little bit more towards Kish because I think she will be the one pushing the higher pace. She'll be the bully in this fight, so that should probably get her the scorecards here in this spot. But Yoder is the more dangerous fighter of the two. I mean, her jiu-jitsu game is top-notch. If Kish wants to fool around on the ground, she could find herself easily submitted. And even on the feet, Kish's strike defense seems to be, let's stick my face out there and take as much punishment as I can. I mean, that's not a good way to block. So she does absorb punishment. She is a very tough fighter. I mean, it's hard to really get her off of you as far as the pace that Kish pushes, even if you do stun her a little bit. So I do think it probably goes to the cards and Kish wins. But if it's inside, it's Yoder pulling off the upset here. So this is going to be an interesting fight, but my slight lean towards Kish.
Yeah, I have to agree with you as well. Kish has been in there against a few better people and was able to walk away with wins. And Yoder is a really talented fighter. She had an appearance on The Ultimate Fighter 23. She just fought an Invicta, just like J.J. Aldrich, actually. And her performance against Amber Brown was spectacular. So I have to give her a lot of credit. She's looked really good in her last couple fights. On the show, Yoder did okay. She beat Jody Esquibal to get into the house, which was a big upset as a split decision. Could have gone either way. And then she lost her first fight while actually in the house. So I don't think she's quite at the top of the UFC, but these girls from Tough 23 have all looked really good with Moyle, Amanda Bobby Cooper, Suarez. They've all been able to pick up wins. So I can see Yoder having some success in the UFC, but I think Justine Kish is just a little bit too much for her at this point. So I have to side with Kish. Next up, we have light heavyweight fight. First bout on the main card, John Vellante, 14-7. Separ Bek Safarov, who's 8-0. So who do you like in this one, Nick?
I'm a little confused with Safarov because one fight you watch him and he looks like he's kind of a disciplined fighter, patiently waits for his spots and then just unloads. He's got a big power striking game is basically what he has. He looks for takedowns and ground and pound as well, but I don't think he's going to have that success, obviously, against Vellante. Vellante's takedown defense is legit. So this is going to be a stand and bang type of battle unless Vellante decides to get top position on the ground against Safarov. So I don't know. I mean, in another fight that you watch Safarov, he looks like a wild, aggressive can in some ways, you know what I mean? Like his defense is not there and his gas tank is questionable as well. So I think Safarov could definitely pull this fight off. Vellante gets hit way too much and Safarov has enough power that he might be able to get rid of Vellante, especially early in this fight. So I think Safarov maybe in round one, but as this fight progresses, I do think Vellante is the better, more complete fighter, the more experienced fighter. Even though he does tend to gas as the fight goes, I think Safarov's gas tank is going to be worse. So it's hard not to like Vellante, honestly, in this spot. So I'm going to side with him. If this is just one, as far as the betting window goes, you got to be very careful betting either guy here because they got so much defensive flaws, but I'll pick Vellante.
And I have to pick Vellante as well. Safarov is just so inconsistent that you can't really trust him here. And even though Vellante, we kind of know where he is at this point. He's kind of a mid to lower tier UFC light heavyweight, but he's got a lot of size and strength for the division. He has a lot of power in his hands. And Safarov is making his UFC debut. He's fighting on relatively short notice. And I just don't think that he can step up here and perform at the top level of his ability. So for the most part, I just have to side with John Vellante. I think he can bully him, especially in the clinch and on the ground. And in the stand-up, it'll be competitive, especially the first round. But I think Vellante's kicks might be a big factor as well, where he was able to really do some serious damage in a couple of his best performances. So I'm siding with John Vellante. Next up, we have Corey Anderson, who's 9-2, taking on Sean O'Connell, who's 17-8. So who do you like in this one, Nick?
Mine might be still a little bit too high. I know I opened it basically in this spot here. I mean, the comeback's actually gotten better on O'Connell, but O'Connell's better than most people give him credit for, honestly. And if Anderson's not careful here, he can end up getting caught with something crazy and losing this fight. Anderson's chin, I don't trust quite that much still, even though he's kind of bounced back after the Vellante loss and he's looked okay. I still think that I'm wary a little bit with his chin, but overall, I mean, Anderson is a pretty more clean striker on the feet. Obviously he's got the wrestling advantage over O'Connell as well. He's going to try to grind O'Connell out and I think he probably gets the job done. He just has to be careful doing so. So I think Anderson gets back on track, starts a new little run going, and I think that he does have a lot of potential, but he just has to be careful here in this spot.
I completely agree. Corey Anderson outclasses O'Connell, especially if he could just use his wrestling. His wrestling is his biggest weapon. When he gets on top of people, he can absolutely steamroll them, and they have no way to really fight back. But if he stands and screws around and toys around on the feet, you see that he can lose. And O'Connell does have a lot of power on the feet. His chin is a liability, O'Connell's, but so is Anderson. So why play with fire? Anderson should just take O'Connell down and beat him up, and he could probably just get a TKO on the ground if he wants the knockout that bad. So I like Corey Anderson here. I don't like him at the odds, but I do think he should win. Now we have the co-main event, Francis Ngannou, who is 8-1, taking on Anthony Hamilton, who's 15-5. Who do you like in this one, Nick? I think I have a guess.
Yeah, Ngannou. It's hard to pick against the guy, especially in a matchup like this. I mean, I think he destroys Hamilton, to be honest with you. I again, respect Hamilton, what he's accomplished. I think he's achieved above and beyond what his ability is, honestly, and he's getting better. So it comes from a solid camp. So he's not exactly a bum. I'm not saying that. I mean, his chin has been suspect in the past, and now he's facing one of the most devastating strikers in the heavyweight division in Ngannou. So I think Hamilton's going to have to come out here and basically flurry Ngannou and try to catch him early and maybe put him out, because I don't think he's going to have a lot of success with the takedowns. And on the feet, Ngannou is going to make life miserable for him. So I'm going to pick Ngannou to win.
And I'm in complete agreement. Ngannou is so big, so strong, so powerful. I think he might be the next big thing in the heavyweight division. We haven't really seen a super prospect arrive in the heavyweight division since like Stipe Miocic. And even then it took Miocic a couple years to really turn it up a notch and then become a champion caliber fighter. I think Ngannou's almost there already. I really do. Maybe I'm overhyping him, but this guy has all the tools to be a great heavyweight. And Anthony Hamilton, he has power, and if he can get on top of you, he can drop some bombs. But unless Anthony Hamilton lands a haymaker out of nowhere, maybe the best haymaker he's ever thrown in his life, or if Hamilton, unless he can take Ngannou down and keep him down, I just see Ngannou steamrolling him here, getting a knockout at some point, kind of like what a Todd Duffy did to him. So definitely Francis Ngannou. And last but not least, main event, Derek Lewis, heavyweight fight. He's 16-4 with one no contest, taking on Shamil Abdurakhimov, who's 17-3. So who do you like in this one, Nick, and why?
I mean, technically speaking, you got to almost like Abdurakhimov overall. I mean, Lewis is definitely a beast. I mean, it's fitting. I mean, he definitely brings it. He's got all sorts of power. I think a lot of the heavyweights out there are intimidated by his style. I mean, the guy could take some punishment. He's just a grinder. He's getting better on the feet as well, and just has that kind of knockout power that you don't want to really mess with all that much. Lewis is the type of fighter that looks to put you on the floor and then just smash you on the ground. So he's going to look to do that to Abdurakhimov. But overall, skill set wise, I'm telling you, Abdurakhimov is the more technical striker on the feet. He's not that bad. I mean, he's faced some decent competition thus far in the UFC. He's going to have to stay off his back and probably not let Lewis go to work like he normally does, though. So it's tough. I could realistically see this going either way. So I think it's a dog or pass situation, honestly, especially again at the price. I mean, do we have enough confidence or that much confidence in Lewis right now at -210 over a legitimately better technical fighter? I don't know. But as far as pick goes, I'm going to ride the wave right now with Lewis and see where he's at. But I'm expecting him to kind of have a setback eventually, and it might start with Abdurakhimov.
And I can completely understand being cautious about this, because Lewis is, while he's improving on feet, he's not a world beater there. Abdurakhimov should definitely get the better of him, similar to how he performed in his Anthony Hamilton fight. Now, where Lewis has the big advantage is on the ground. When Lewis gets on top of people, he just mauls them. I mean, it's over the second he starts landing one or two shots on the canvas. So if Lewis can get on top of Abdurakhimov, the fight's over. You saw what happened in Abdurakhimov's UFC debut. Timothy Johnson, Abdurakhimov was looking okay on the feet. Johnson took him down and then just bashed his skull in from full mount to win the fight in the first round. So if Derek Lewis can get Abdurakhimov on his back, I see this fight ending in a hurry. And I think at some point it does. Although if he can't get the fight to the ground, I think Abdurakhimov could pull this out. But I do expect Derek Lewis to get on top and to land a killing blow at some point. So my pick is Derek Lewis. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 206 and our quick picks for UFC Fight Night 102. Our premium bets for the events will be released on Thursday for UFC Fight Night 102 and probably Friday for UFC 206 following the weigh-ins for the events. So stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker Premium member. If we have any free plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to a free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, 5Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.